Hello and welcome to Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
And Jem, what are we going to be talking about this week?
Well, we occasionally do anniversary episodes. We did one earlier this year about women getting the vote in Britain. But at some point, I'm sure we're going to have to do one about the end of World War One. But one of the ones which I'm curious as to how much coverage it will be getting in 2018. But we're also, the women's vote was 1918. End of World War One was 1918. But the other thing that happened in 1918 was the spread of so-called Spanish flu. And this outbreak of influenza is much forgotten. And I actually make a very big point of mentioning it in my book, Silent Crossroads, which sort of starts in World War One, finishes in World War Two. So it does show you sort of the interwar years and points out, yeah, this was a horrible disease that annihilated a huge amount of the world's population. As soon as an infectious disease spreads across national boundaries, that's when we get something called a pandemic. So this was a pandemic which, unlike most influenza, it is worth just pausing. There is a big difference between getting a cold and catching the flu. Flu is short for influenza. And nowadays, you get a lot of people going, oh, yeah, I feel really lousy. I must have the flu. No, if you got the flu, you're going to be in bed for a week and you're going to wish you were dead. You're going to have a banging, throbbing headache. You're going to be horribly achy and feverish. And that is very different to just a bad cold. But the thing is, normal influenza, I mean, yes, it may be bad for you, but if you're a healthy adult, you'll be okay. Influenza is dangerous if you are frail, which is either very old or very young. Very young being under 3, and old, well, that's kind of debatable. So that's how normal flu attacks human beings. But what was unique about this particular strain of influenza was it specifically went for healthy young people. People in their prime were the ones who were dying more than the children and old people.
And I would be right in saying, wouldn't I, that the Spanish flu killed more people than the First World War.
Yes, so we were getting to that. So it's estimated that about 10 million people lost their lives in World War One, and about 60 million people lost their lives in World War Two. And indeed, World War Two is the single largest loss of life in human history in any war. Therefore, it tends to be called the largest or most destructive war. But to give you an idea, Spanish flu, starting in 1918, finishing in 1919, it kind of went over the winter and went around the globe, killed between 80 and 100 million people in the space of about a year. So that gives you an idea of how destructive this was when you put it up to the... So it was like 8 World War Ones, but we all remember the war. We don't remember the Spanish flu nearly as much.
And the question that I immediately have at that point in time, because I've not really thought about this with the sense of this being an anniversary, as it were, is the question of, well, why? And sort of the first thing that immediately springs to mind is, well, the war is something that people did. We can teach children about the war. We can say this happened. These are the reasons for it. You know, this is what happened as a result of it. These are the reasons. These are the people that were involved with it. But historically speaking, when we get on to a massive flu epidemic like this that's so quick and so devastating, we can't teach anybody this is the reason for it. Now, I know, you know, we can say this enhanced it, the fact that there was the war, the conditions people were living in, and so on and so forth. But whenever illness strikes, illness is always slightly scarier than a lot of other forms of death and things, because it just appears. And especially something like this, there was no rationale. Like you say, it's not attacking those people who are weak or infirm to start with. This is an illness that can hit anybody at any time. And I think that adds this fear factor, it adds this element of scare and everything else. And I wonder if it's ignored because it's not, you know, and I'm using this term, you know, sort of very carefully, it's not a good story in terms of history. It doesn't have a story to it. It doesn't have a cause. It doesn't have the effect. It doesn't have people involved in it. It is just a devastating illness as we through. Or whether it's not taught about and things, because it's just so scary. It's the idea that this flu can sweep in and kill 80 million people, and basically there's very little that can be done about it. And we are all aware, you know, you watch sort of programs like things like Survivors or The Walking Dead, you know, if a sudden illness, a sudden outbreak of something comes, there is very, very little that can actually be done at the ground level to keep yourself safe.
Yes. Well, the weird thing is you've just thrown a whole bunch of things out there. Well, one thing to I absolutely agree with is it doesn't have the same story as something like World War One. You know, we tend to want to have something to push against, you know, a seen enemy. And, you know, we can start arguing about who started World War One or whatever, but it's fairly easy to say, you know, if we're British, we're going to consider us the good guys and the Germans as the bad guys. They weren't Nazis, that was the other one. But anyway, you know, so that kind of fits together quite well. It's a bit like movies. There are sometimes, there's movies like Outbreak, for example, and you mentioned sort of like the Walking Dead, which is sort of similar about infection, as it were. And it's in a way, it's kind of unsatisfying. There's no big bad guy. And in Walking Dead, it tends to be human bad guys rather than zombies because they're all the same. They're kind of the same thing as a pathogen, an illness. Whereas, and in Outbreak, very good film starring Dustin Hoffman. Warning, it does also have Kevin Spacey in it. But you know what? He is actually a good actor. He seems to be a terrible human being, but a good actor. But anyway, that's a really exciting movie. But even in that, they have to kind of symbolize the illnesses as in this case they've got to get the monkey, which is sort of like the first thing that had the illness, and therefore if they can get the monkey they can save everybody. But you know, if you've just got an illness, you've just got an illness, and as you said, there's only so many shots of people lying in bed looking sick that actually creates an impact, whereas war creates far more powerful imagery. So that I absolutely agree with. But what's interesting is they tend to say we need to learn our lessons from war, and it's like the reality is we will never fight a war like World War One again. Because of modern technology, we won't be stuck in trenches for 4 years. There's tanks now, helicopters, parachutists. You know, war is more mobile. And World War Two was very different to World War One. But we can learn something from Spanish flu because there are still infectious diseases out there. Just every winter we have like flu season, and basically washing your hands in an antibacterial wash will help, although bacteria are not the same thing as viruses, and influenza is a virus. But yes, covering your mouth when you sneeze. If you feel really ill, don't go on the tube. You know, there are loads of, you know, basic things that you could absolutely learn from Spanish flu that could help us today and right now, and that isn't necessarily remembered.
But presumably it is remembered in the sort of circles. I suppose the thing is that what we can learn, sort of the very, very basic, I mean, we do have better hygiene, I think, in general, it's fair to say, than we did in 1918. But the actual process of working with the flu, and I know this is one thing with the flu, is the flu changes constantly. It's constantly evolving. So that's why you have to have flu vaccinations. If you have to have the flu vaccination, you have to have it sort of every year or two, I believe. I think it's every year you're supposed to if you're at real risk, because the flu changes and we just can't keep up. Whatever we learn about it, whatever we learn about all these illnesses and things, the fact that the flu is changing, and let's take that back 100 years ago to 1918, you'd just come off the back of this terrible, terrible war. People had died, so many people had died, you lost so many members of your family, and you get this news that the war is over, everybody is safe, we've seen the photos, the celebrations, the war is over, and then it's like this strange thing of we want to be able to celebrate the fact that peace was achieved. We want to be able to remember the end of the war, November 11th, 1918. We have a date that we can remember the war ended. For those people to then be, one, thrown back into the midst of this, suddenly you're actually more likely to lose somebody post-war in the year following the end of the war than you were during the war itself is an incredible thing to try and just get your head around. And the other side of it is when we're looking at an anniversary, when we're looking at a memorial, straight away at the end of that war, I think it was 1921, I'm ready to be corrected, that the Armistice Day as Remembrance Day was set up as a memorial day where people could actually just take a minute or 2 minutes and just think about all the people that had put their lives on the line for the war from all the different countries. And the trouble is, with the Spanish flu, one, it was, you know, it was the illness, it got people at different times, it was, but also there's not an end date. You can't say this is a date that we defeated Spanish flu, this is a date that we got rid of Spanish flu. I mean, we do have that celebration of the smallpox virus, for example. You know, the eradication of smallpox is a big thing, the eradication of smallpox. But when we get to Spanish flu, there's not a date. There is, it's very difficult to remember it in any sort of recorded anniversary because we don't have that date, that thing we can pin it on. Anything like we've said, the things we've talked about already, the suffrage, things like the end of World War One, we can actually pin to a specific date, whereas the Spanish flu was something that happened throughout the course of this period of time. And it's very, really difficult to think, well, when would you even remember all those people and how would you even have some sort of focus there?
I all those things I absolutely agree with. I think it's worth just sort of layering on top that when you do have these major other commemorations, and let's face it, World War One has kind of been seared into the consciousness in Britain, to therefore have it sort of overlapping with something else makes that other thing kind of lesser. It's a little bit like when I was a kid, it's like, wow, do you know what? When I've now forgotten her name. Oh, for heaven's sakes, Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa dies. You know, the whole world's just going to be sort of in mourning and things like that. She died a couple of days after Princess Diana died. Now, because Diana died and it was a real shock that a young woman died, you know, it was commented on that he died, but it, she died. It was Diana that was the focal point. And like here, you know, you can absolutely say World War One's the focal point and therefore Spanish flu's pushed to one side. I can't believe I've just compared that to Princess Diana and Mother Teresa. It just popped into my head. Sorry, everybody. Anyway, but my question is to you, Greg. Of course, it's called Spanish flu. It shouldn't be called Spanish flu. Do you have any idea why it's people have picked up of it as called it Spanish flu? See, if you're like me, you would have assumed that it's like, what, Spanish flu, because it started in Spain and blah, blah, blah. No. And actually, World War One inadvertently created the pandemic. It started in America. And what clearly happened was some of the men being shipped to Europe were carrying the influenza virus. And of course, once you get all these men packed together in ships and then trains being spread across France on all the rail networks, you sit there and go, oh man, we didn't stand a chance, did we? No, we really didn't. It just exploded out of the all the transportation networks in Western Europe, and then it just kept going from there. At that point, there was no way you could stop it. But it hit Spain like everywhere else. But interestingly, in Britain, because obviously we're in the, you know, still finishing off a war, Britain very much downplayed the, you know, they recognized there was an outbreak of flu, but it was very much played down in the newspapers, as it was in France, as it was in America. And actually one of the few places that was completely honest about thousands of people are dying from flu was Spain. And therefore the perception, which was wrong, but the perception was Spain was unusually harshly hit by Spanish flu. It just turned out Spanish newspapers were telling more truth than anyone else.
And I suppose that one of the reasons that this was downplayed in all the newspapers was the fact, again, coming off of the end of the First World War, you're trying to rebuild the country, you're trying to rebuild people's faith. You don't need to be hit by another major catastrophe, and I think that's probably one end of it. The other thing, thinking historically with this, is World War One and World War Two. If we look at those, they stand out as devastating wars. And one of the big things, especially in World War Two, is we get to the point where war affects everybody in their own homes. You know, the war is coming to, you know, dropping bombs on people. But even World War One, the number of citizens that were called up, the fact that we had conscription, people being pulled up to the army, and every family being touched by the war was something, you know, that was happening for the first time, especially in the UK and a lot of places around the world. The numbers of people that died, it was the first time that a war had had, I think, that kind of impact on every single person in the country. We've spoken before about most wars essentially ending up being local, a series of localized conflicts. That's not what World War One was. The reason we call them the World Wars is because they did bring a real global sense to it. But when we're talking about the flu and we're talking about Spanish flu, well, one, people were more used to mortality back then generally anyway. You know, the basic conditions weren't as good. People were used to having local cholera outbreaks and things going back into the 1800s. So sort of a lot of the families would remember conditions being worse. Also, people have got the plague to look back on. People have got the Black Death. We have these major sweeps of illnesses, historically speaking, that kind of are held up. And it's one of the things we talk about a lot about labeling things and the dangers of attaching labels to things. We have the Black Death, we have the plague, we have sort of the 1300s, we sort of have all these stories of the plague and the way that they were run and plague villages and plague pits and all of this going on, which kind of to my mind says that by the time we get to Spanish flu from a historical point of view, and again, this is a horrible way to phrase it, but historically speaking, we've kind of got the story about illness. If you wanted to write a history book that was, I mean, you said this to me before, Jeff, you know, there are certain subjects in history. If you write a history book and you want to have a bestseller, you basically write it about the war or the Romans. You know, that's the sort of, if you want to write a history book dealing with illness and you want people to buy it about a major illness, you write it about the Black Death, the plague. Those, for some reason, is the major illness. That, for some reason, is the one that's got this story to it in the national consciousness. The plague, the Black Death, that is the bad one. And the Spanish flu then becomes, you know, sort of the one that doesn't get the story. Less people will write about it because less people are writing about it already.
I think that's absolutely fair. Well, I mean, you're quoting me, so thank you very much for that, Craig. You know, as you said, there are other focuses. It's a hard story to tell. So there's this concept of germ theory. Now, there was actually an Islamic scholar who, you know, round about 900 AD, he came up with lots of interesting medical concepts. And one of the things he thought was, perhaps illnesses weren't spread by sin or something like that. You've been a bad person, that's why you get sick, which a lot of people thought of, both in the East and West. He goes, well, maybe there are tiny taints. Maybe the illness is contained in something, in his phrase, smaller than a grain of rice, which sounds like germ theory to me, but it never really caught on. And of course, if you can't see it and you don't really know, that's the thing. But kind of by the second half of the Victorian era, like the 1880s onwards, you know, there is now an understanding of germ theory, and while it was being caught on, like, for example, some Victorian doctors love to have surgeon gowns covered in gore, so showing, look how many people I've operated on. Whereas, you know, nowadays we absolutely know that's just a big pile of disease right there on your front. So you always want to have new scrubs on. You always want new clothing on when you're operating. Sterile environment's really important. But there can be no doubt that by World War One, germ theory was accepted pretty much everywhere and people were operating that way. However, when you are already at absolute stretched maximum through battle damage from World War One, and now you've got this mass of people all sick, spreading everywhere, kind of faster than you can keep up with it, the modern, and it was modern medicine by World War One. Interesting fact here, plastic surgery. You think that plastic surgery might be a very modern invention? It was invented in World War One, where they took flaps of skin from another part of your body to, particularly to the face. There were lots of facial injuries to give you a chance to sort of rebuild your face or something. So plastic surgery was around in World War One, but you know, so they absolutely understood the concept, but then it was kind of like, but it's so overwhelming, we can't deal with it.
And I think that is the crucial thing to think about, is we can sort of have all these things set up. And again, this comes down to my initial point, and we're moving towards the end of the episode. The first thing I said about the flu just being scary, this Spanish flu just being scary, and it being very difficult to teach in a way that doesn't just spread fear. Because even today, with all of our technology and everything else, we know full well as soon as an illness breaks out, and you know, we've had little things the last few years, I say little things, but we've had smaller outbreaks. We've had things like the swine flu and the bird flu a few years ago, and these did cause some deaths, both of them. But there's basically, everyone very quickly realizes, well, there's not a lot you can do. Doesn't matter, you know, if it suddenly became that there was some serious flu like the Spanish flu hit now, there's not really anything, you know, we've got all the clean hospitals, we've got all the modern technology, we've got everything we've got clean water running to the houses. And still, if an illness strikes, it's very difficult to know, well, what will we be able to do even if there was an epidemic today? So to take that back 100 years, it's really difficult to put yourselves in the mind. And I think that what we've discussed really is more about, you know, how history examines different things today and how history can change events, but also why we examine different points of view from history. And I think that's been a really interesting discussion. I don't know how much we've actually gone into the details of the Spanish flu. And
can we? I mean, picking up your point that you sort of draw a thread throughout the entire podcast, there's not a lot to say other than this illness spread everywhere and killed loads of people. But it's interesting, looking back at your ancestors at the time of World War One, you might be thinking, you know, my great-grandfather, oh, he survived the trenches. He was about 8, 9, 10 times more likely to have died from Spanish flu than actually from being shot at in World War One. How crazy is that? And, you know, don't be surprised if you find that there are certain branches of your family that ended abruptly in the winter of 1918, 1919, and it had nothing to do with war. But the last thing I want to say on that, because you're also talking about scary, is you just jogged something in my mind. A couple of years ago, I was at the Imperial War Museum, and, you know, I'm looking at lots of different things, but they're also talking about the modern army. And the army had been in Africa dealing with an outbreak of Ebola, which is a really, really nasty illness. It's very rare. It comes from Africa and sort of Zaire area. And they actually had the sort of the cleaning kit that they used in this Ebola outbreak that was behind glass. And I found it really interesting that even though clearly it's been cleaned, clearly they wouldn't put something on display you could catch Ebola from, clearly it's behind glass, I was a bit nervous standing in front of it going, maybe I'll catch something, you know? It's just weird. You know, once you know about germs, I'm not a germaphobe or anything like that, but, you know, nobody wants to catch Ebola, and it's like, I found it interesting. I found that more sinister than anything in the Imperial War Museum. It makes me a wuss, okay?
We've only got a minute left, so I've got one more question.
I'm done, that's me done.
I've got one more question for you, and you may or may not know the answer to this, but when you were talking earlier on about how the Spanish flu spread, and you said it sort of picked on healthy people, and you're saying sort of family lines ended, if people got the Spanish flu, was it a case of sort of, you know, you could have a family member who was susceptible and would go down with the flu? Or was it like the plague and it would take out a family? Because I know there are plague villages around. They're fairly creepy places to visit where either the village shut down completely, or you can go to a village that's still functioning, but you can go and read in some of the churches around the country the lists of all the people in that village that died of the plague. You can see the houses and you can wander through the village and you can see, you know, that house lost this many people, this house lost this many people, and you can see basically villages wiped out by this, by the plague. Would there have been places wiped out like that, or would it have been this family lost a person, that family lost this one person?
It tended to be this family lost a person, because although everybody might have caught influenza, as I said, you know, if you're perhaps, it's kind of like if you're in your prime, that's when you were, you know, being male or female, that's with the people who strangely this time around were at their most vulnerable. But of course, you'd never want a big discrepancy between male and female. And if you've already got, let's say, 1% of your sort of like marriageable male population dead because of World War One, and then you lose another 1 or 2% of them to the illness, then actually imagine you're a sort of 22-year-old girl in 1918 trying to find yourself a husband. Actually, you're suddenly competing against a lot more women. There simply aren't enough guys to get around. So it causes social problems. It causes health problems. Obviously, it causes death. So all kinds of ripples from this. But yeah, I guarantee when it comes to Armistice Day, it'll all be about how the war ended in the winter of 1918 rather than, and then lots more people continued dying in that winter. That's it. I'm done. Should we go to plugs?
I think we should go to plugs. I think we'll leave that one there. So you're up first with your plug, Jim. Try and make it a happy, uplifting plug.
Okay, well, I mentioned Silent Crossroads earlier, but I did that one last week. So actually, I'll go for perhaps my most fun book, okay? Forgotten History. Over 180 different just weird and wonderful stories from history, from Nazi super cows to the most dangerous chemical ever discovered, to the time a pope actually dug up the previous dead pope and put him on trial. Weird things like that. It's just chock full of that kind of stuff. Forgotten History. Look, if you like a good story, you don't even have to like history. If you'd like a good story, check out Forgotten History, available kind of everywhere, including the Condensed Histories website.
And I'm going to do a little plug for Tales from the Road, which is my other podcast. Tales from the Road. Now, some of you will have noticed that a few weeks ago we changed our podcast cover image. If you look at your phone now.
I really like the new one.
You'll see a picture of me and Jem. Now, that reason we suddenly changed it is because of the rarest occasions me and Jem actually met up in person. So if you head over to the Tales of the Road podcast, I recommend you start, if you're a fan of Condensed History, Gems, start by listening to episode 6, which is the episode where I actually record live an interview with Jem in one of our... We were both struggling, I think, slightly to be actually sitting face-to-face during an interview and actually talking to each other face-to-face. Really, that's the one. If you're listening to this podcast, head over to Tales of the Road, give that one a listen. Please, whatever podcast you listen to, if you're listening to one of our podcasts or all of our podcasts, or if you're reading one of Jem's books or even my book, then please do take the time wherever you listen, wherever you read, wherever you do anything that deals with people creating art on the internet, please make sure you take the time to leave a review, because that does so much good in helping us get the word out. But for now, thank you very much to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Jem DeLuccio.
And thank you to my wonderful co-host, Greg Chapman.
And thank you to all of our wonderful listeners for listening. And that is all for us this week. So for now, goodbye and take care.